ourselves and to invite God's Spirit to guide us in our time. Yesterday's session, we started with a quote from St. Augustine, and we'll come back to it now. You have made us for yourself, O God, and our hearts are restless until we find our rest in you. Until that empty space in us that is made for communion with God, until that space that's made for union with God is filled, we have a hungering, a thirsting, a yearning that cannot be satisfied. We don't always recognize that that yearning is for God, and we don't always know that only God can fill that space. We don't sometimes know what to name it. Sometimes we're tempted to fill our lives with many things, with work, with people, with the noise of radio and television, hobbies, activities, dreams, illusions, maybe even sometimes religion, hoping somehow to satisfy that thirst that haunts us, or at least to dull it. Yesterday, I used a story that Garrison Keillor tells and used it as a way for us to think about spirituality as God having an arm around us so that we can really be who we are. And once that we've known God's arm around us, we really can't settle for anything less to fill that yearning, to satisfy that hunger and thirst. The rest, the nourishment that comes from communion with God is a gift. There's nothing that we can do to make it happen. But there are things that we can do to make ourselves more receptive to the gift and more able to use the gift when it comes. Nurturing our spirituality begins, I believe, with paying attention to two things. One, that restlessness, that yearning, that hungering, that thirsting. Paying attention to it and learning to name it for what it is, a yearning for God. The second thing to pay attention to is God's arm around us. Exploring that and naming it. The late Henry Nouwen, a Roman Catholic priest and a very prolific writer, maybe some of you like me have read about everything that he's written, but in a book that's now out of print I've discovered because I like to use it in one of the classes that I teach to deacon students, a book called The Living Reminder, he helped me to better understand something when he wrote about the ministry of absence and presence. And to think about God's presence in our lives, but also to acknowledge that we are still on the road, that we're not fully in communion with God, that the reign of God has not yet fully come. So always we have that interplay in our lives between God's presence and God's absence. And even the most deeply spiritual people have those dark, dry, thirsty, hungry times when God seems far away or even absent. And that interplay, it seems to me, always needs to be there, at least this side of the grave. And in fact, I think all of spirituality really is about learning how to center and so to balance. I said that this session this afternoon was to ways to nurture spirituality, and I'd like to give my top 10 ways to nurture spirituality, and it's surely not an exhaustive list, and it's not in any particular area of priority. I'm not like David Letterman in that regard. And these are not necessarily things that will be new to you. I hope that I can help you recall some of the things that you already know deep inside yourselves. I expect that we'll have some time for conversation so that you may add some things to the list or elaborate on them or talk about some things that are helpful to you. So, my top 10 list. The first one is to listen to the way that God says, I love you, to you. It's as if God speaks to us in many different languages, and some of us understand some of those languages better than others. It's sort of like we have a mother tongue in which God speaks to us. And it may be different, or it will be different for different people. So you might think about what's the language in which you most readily hear God's I love you? What's your kind of mother tongue? And it seems to me that listening to God's I love you often requires quiet, because I love you is often whispered and not shouted. So paying attention to God's I love you often means cultivating quiet and silence in our lives, to leave empty spaces, open spaces, where we really can listen and hear. Number two, listen to who you are. Yesterday, I think I said that spirituality is personal, but it is not, I don't mean by that it's private, but it's personal. It's very much attuned to who we are. That I think of the Pentecost story, when each heard in their own language, almost as if it was a very personal kind of thing. Part of that, I mean, there are many, many, many dimensions to that. One is to pay attention to the rhythms and patterns in our lives. Are you a morning person or an afternoon person or a night person or a 10:45 to 12:30 person? Or, when are your rhythms at your best? When are you at your best? And that may say something about the time that you want to give attention to God. I try, for example, to pray at night, to meditate at night. It just doesn't work for me. The morning hours are much better. because I'm less distracted and I'm more awake. Now, that wasn't always the case. I used to be more of a night person, which is another thing to pay attention to, is the rhythms and cycles of our lives. That where someone is in late adolescence is certainly not the same place a person is in near the end of their life, in old age or in middle age. And if you think about that, you may think about how your own communion with God has changed over the years and how it's changing now. Another thing to pay attention to in listening to who you are is just what kind of person are you. If you're familiar with the Myers-Briggs personality typing, you know, are you a person who gets energy from being with other people? Are you a person who likes to process things alone? Are you a more logical, linear thinking kind of person? Do you go more all over the place when you think? To pay attention to that will say something about how you pray. Is there anyone who's familiar with Enneagrams? Okay, a few of you are. Okay. Pardon me?
What are they called?
Enneagrams. I think it's E-N, are there two N's?
Yes.
E-A-G-R-A-M. And it's a kind of personality typing that I think comes out of the Sufi tradition, an Eastern tradition. It's very ancient. It was brought into North America by Jesuits, and they use it in their spiritual direction. And there are basically 9 personality types, and it really can help you understand. It's kind of uncanny, really. You read the descriptions and you think somebody's been following me around, you know, when you can identify your own type. But there's a great deal of literature that's written about Enneagrams in terms of how to pray, what your particular strengths and gifts are out of that person, and what your kind of pet sins that are going to entrap you might be. So paying attention to your personality. What kind of person are you? How do you process things? How do you relate to other people? Another thing that is helpful in paying attention to who you are, I think, is keeping a journal of some sort. How many of you are journalers of some sort? Okay, some of you are. Pardon me?
I say periodically.
Periodically. That's kind of where I am. I did it very, very faithfully for about 15 years, and now I'm sort of pick it up and put it down. But it's a way, if you do it over a long period of time, to kind of pay attention to some of those movements in your own life. Are there recurring themes? Are there cycles that you see in your own life? Are there seasonal things for you? Do you find yourself struggling with certain issues in winter that don't show up in your journal in the summertime? So listen to who you are, because spirituality is very personal. Number 3, know that God is not limited to my own experience or any one person's own experience or even a small group's own experience. With God, there is always more. One of the things that is true when we are communing with God, we are just by definition communing with all those other people who have God's arm around them. And one of the things that happens as a result of that connection that we have with other people, if we pay attention to it, is that we begin to learn other languages. It's sort of like tasting new food. When I grew up on a farm in Missouri, and we were kind of meat and potatoes people, and we ate pretty much off the land. And I had never had a Brussels sprout before I went away to school. But when I got to Valparaiso University, and there we had Brussels sprouts on the table, so I had to learn to taste new food.
It's not all bad.
No. And what happens sometimes is that you try this new food and you discover that you do like it, that it really tastes good to you, that it's something that you'd like to do, to have more often. Or you find that some food is interesting to you, but it's not something that you're going to have as part of your regular diet. Or you may find some food that you eat because you know it's good for you, but it's not exactly what you would choose if you were just left to your own tastes. Or you may find that there's some food that you try and you say, well, that was a nice experience, but I don't think I want to eat that again. So kind of think about it as sampling other kinds of food, becoming familiar with a new language or culture, that when other people share with us part of their spiritual journey, that we begin to get a sense of that more that is always there with God, that big embrace that God has. Brian Wren, a British hymnist, has written a book that's called What Language Shall I Borrow? You may recognize that as a phrase from O Sacred Head Now Wounded, is that the chorale? In it, he talks about how we've become very limited in our worship by focusing in on certain images of God only, and that what he really thinks we need in our worship, and what he tries to do in many of his hymns, is to multiply those images of God that we use, so that, again, we begin to understand more fully in our beings that with God there is always more. And in fact, you might try that sometime in your prayer if you have not. Just try to take an image of God that's not one that you ordinarily use, and to address God, to pray to God, thinking of that particular image of God. And multiply the images that you use. God's love is limitless. With God, there is always more, and it cannot be captured or contained. It's like being in the presence of someone we love very much, that there's a sense of fullness and completeness, but yet there's a longing for more. Number four, be with the Word. And I think some of you probably were here this morning for Stephanie Halsell's reading as a spiritual discipline. And I'm not going to say a whole lot about that, other than to say that part of what we're working at is, and I don't want to create a false dichotomy, but it's not just a matter of intellect, of cognitive, of a cognitive activity, but it really is allowing the Word to speak to our hearts. Not that we master the material, but that we let master us, come into us, and dwell in us. And that often means that it is helpful to read little snippets of the scriptures, not read the whole Bible in 6 weeks, so that we pay attention to it. One paragraph, one parable, one verse, even maybe sometimes one word, and just let that be with us for a period of time, a day, a whole day, a week. Joan Chittister had a few years ago published a series of little journal type books called prayer journals. where she suggested that you take one verse of a psalm and work with it all week. And it's very, the little books are really very good because they, she places with those psalms some readings on peace and justice issues. Joan Chittister is a Benedictine nun from the Erie, Pennsylvania community. Another way to be with the Word is to use guided reflections or to use some imagination. And we'll have a chance to do this, if you like, at the end of this session or near the end of this session, where I will take you into one of the gospel stories and invite you to become each of the characters in the story. And then learn something about yourself and about God as a result of that. Number five, and I'm just going to mention this now because the session that I'm going to have on Saturday is really going to expand on this, and it is to pay attention to the children. I believe children have a great deal to teach us in terms of our spirituality. And I don't want to romanticize childhood because I think for many children it is very difficult and very painful. But children, at their best, can teach us a whole lot about things like openness and trust, abandon. You might also like to look at a little book by Jean Gill called Unless You Become as Little Children, in which she expands on this issue of learning from children about spirituality. I've often wondered, by the way, at what would happen in our churches if we really let the children do the children's sermon. Now, I know I realize they sometimes do that by the way they answer questions, but if we really took what Jesus said seriously and let the children teach us, what would that be like in our congregations? Number six. Allow yourself to experience the rhythm between solitude and community. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in his little classic book called Life Together, says, let the one who cannot be in community beware of being alone, and let the one who cannot be alone beware of being in community. There needs to be in our prayer an interplay between our prayer alone and our prayers together. Now, some of us are by nature more attracted to one of those than the other by our personalities. And if we are people who are most comfortable being alone in our prayer, then part of our growth and discipline will be to balance that, to bring that into rhythm with corporate worship and corporate prayer. And the other way is true too. If we find it easier and more comfortable to be in prayer with other people, then we also need to balance that with times alone. I think that I work a lot with college students, and it's very hard for them to find quiet spaces to be alone. Some of you recognize that. It's also hard for some of the rest of us. I mean, I live alone, and sometimes it's hard for me to find alone time, even though I'm more by nature drawn to that than I am with the more corporate things. Another part of this is also to utilize other people through prayer groups or spiritual guidance, perhaps, which I think is becoming a more common practice among Lutherans and other Protestants. It's been something that's been a practice in Roman Catholic and Anglican circles for a long time. But to find someone who has the gift and the skill to help us, to guide us, to mentor us, to befriend us in our prayer and practice of spirituality. Number seven, pay attention to the necessary rhythms of withdrawal, Sabbath rest time, and times of engagement with the world. And that may sound a little bit like solitude and community, but it's a little bit different, I think. The times of Sabbath are not necessarily, although they may be, alone times. But they are times. How many of you were here already on Saturday night? Okay. All right. So you already heard me say some things in my homily about that. But it is the rhythm that is practiced here at Holden of making from Saturday evening to Sunday evening a more relaxed day, a Sabbath day, a restful day. And those times of Sabbath, perhaps not here as much, at least in my experience now, just being here a few days, as back home, that when I take Sabbath time, it is a real reminder to me of who I am, that I am a creature and not God, that I'm a creature with a limit, that I really can only be in one place at one time, that I'm a creature who's formed from the soil. And you may know that the Latin word for soil is humus. And so to be human is also to be humble, to have humility. And that humility is to know that I'm made of the same stuff as the rest of creation. And that the world does go on without me. Strange as it may seem some days. And that engagement is that we are creatures who have God's spirit, God's breath breathed in us. And so we're given the responsibility to be stewards, to be caretakers, to be co-creators of the rest of creation, to be like God, the good mother who knows when to hold firm and when to let go and push us out into the world. Again, I think some of us are more drawn into one direction than the other, that we may be more kind of contemplative, quiet, restful people. Other people are more active, working people who need activity. But both of those are part of a balanced spiritual life. That I think we need to be suspicious of any spirituality that draws us only into ourselves and into a kind of private communion with God and doesn't understand that also part of that spirituality is the engagement with the world, with the rest of creation. And by the same token, I think a spirituality that is only active can become uncentered. And I know that what happens to me is that I begin to feel like I'm giving from my edges, and it's sort of eating, eroding. Whereas when I'm in better balance, I know that my activity is coming out of my center. And I can feel when I'm out of balance. And that really is the eighth thing, which is just to give attention to those rhythms and balances. Solitude and community, withdrawal and engagement, times and seasons, day and night, work and play. One of the books I like in this regard, I found in the library, maybe some of you know Edward Hayes, this book, Prayers for a Planetary Pilgrim, really builds on the seasons of the year and the rhythms of the week and day and night, morning and evening. And what I particularly like about this, and it sort of relates back to the image of multiplying the images of God, is that in his little prayers and psalms and the things that he's written in here, that he uses the more contemporary understandings that we have of the creation. So instead of talking about the sun rising and setting, he talks about the earth rotating on its axis and turning toward the sun. And it just has, from time to time over the years, provided for me a fresh way to pray, and also has brought me back into touch again with those rhythms that, as I said last Saturday, I can get out of touch with so easily in my life. Number nine, understand that spirituality is not my quest for God, but that in this, God is the primary actor. That God seeks me. And if you want to explore that deeply, and maybe some of you have, read the Song of Solomon and understand yourself to be the beloved that God, the eager lover, seeks. That God desires communion with us. That God wants to communicate with us. That it's not me going out and finding God, but it's opening myself to God's looking for me, seeking me, loving me. And number 10. And I always tell the deaconess students that I teach that if they don't learn anything else from me, this is what they must learn. And it's to be gentle with yourself. Wherever you are is where you are. And that's where it is that God wants to be in communion with you and touch you. And that's the place to begin. That Garrison Keillor story and the way we worked with it yesterday said God's arm is around us so we can be who we are, just who we are. It reminds me of a Peanuts cartoon I saw many, many years ago where Charlie Brown is standing there and he says, "It finally hit me. God loves me, little old me." And that's we live in the forgiveness of sins. God has been gentle with us, and so we can be gentle with ourselves. So that's my top 10, and I'd like to just stop here for some questions, comments, additions, things that you might like to pick up on. If there's something that you resonated with or something that you think should be added to my top 10 list. Yes?
I guess one thing that struck me was your comment about that we need to be cautious if we find ourselves drawing away and thinking that's spirituality. Those weren't your words exactly, but knowing that that many times that's a way of escapism or just withdrawing into ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think there's a difference between having a healthy rhythm of time away and time with others and time of retreat and time of engagement. But I think if we get too far in one direction, then we need to be paying attention to that. And I think that part of what happens is that the corporate time that we spend, the time that we spend in the community of faith, really provides some balances for us, because I think we can be deceived, you know, that the Spirit of God isn't the only spirit that's moving in the world, and that we can find ourselves being pulled off in in directions that are not helpful and healthy to us, and that part of what the community of faith does is keep us balanced and keeps us in touch. And the other side of that, I think, is that our time alone can really deepen those corporate experiences. But as you picked up on, to be suspect of a spirituality that is too lopsided doesn't have that sense of balance. Were there things that you resonated with, or things that you feel like you like to explore more as you try to nurture spirituality in your own life?
I think all of it was really, it had this kind of like, gosh, this is so simple. I can do all of this, it's without a problem. But at the same time, it seems to be kind of tough. I think with I'm a student, and I volunteered to work with the freshman dorms this year. And having, even in my own room, trying to, with all this chaos outside, it would immediately turn on the radio or turn on something or turn on NPR or something that it had to be some sort of noise going on all the time, and it wasn't okay just to be. It was no way. I had to be listening to something, even if I was brewing coffee or something in the morning, just to kind of think about it. But I don't know, it seemed a lot of it all kind of made sense, and I was part of that, everything that you talked about, but at the same time it was like at different times and being lopsided at other points, trying to balance it out. I don't really have anything to offer to say, but just kind of say, yeah, that I relate to everything that you talked about.
I think you're exactly right. It is so simple, but it is so hard. Yes.
I think what struck me in your list was the comment you gave about finding empty spaces of time. And I think our culture has become even more driven in terms of helping us all become terribly task-orientated. We have all these new, whether it's kitchen aids or pieces of technology, so that we can get more done. And that we can use our time more efficiently. And so what happens for me is I get very good at being very efficient, doing lots of things that have nothing to do with what I should be doing, really, in terms of taking time just to sit back and let it soak into me.
Yeah, I mean, it occurs to me that one of the things that's very nice about coming up here is that you have that long trip up where you really can't do anything, you know? And a friend of mine, when I first started out as a parish deaconess, I was in Western Canada, and a friend of mine was an 80-year-old man in the congregation who had been, when he graduated from the seminary in 1912, the northernmost pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod at that time. And he had a huge territory in northern Alberta that he covered by horseback. And he talked about how those times in between were such wonderful prayer times for him in terms of reflecting on what had happened and preparing for what was to come. He talked about coming back to the United States for church conventions and meetings, and again having a long train trip in which to prepare himself mentally and spiritually for what was to happen, and then to digest it on the trip back home. And I think about how I fly around from one place to the other, and I barely know what day it is, you know, or what hour it is, and that I don't have those times to reflect and to prepare in the same way. And I think, too, that you talk about all of these gadgets that we have that are supposed to be labor-saving and time-saving devices. But what happens is that we don't save time. We just fill it up with more things. When you think about it, I mean, when my mother used to work do laundry with her agitating wringer washing machine and hang it on the, that was an all-day job, really. And for me, I can do my laundry in half an hour while I'm doing something else, or an hour, wash and dry both. And I can do something else. But what do I do with that time that I've saved? I fill it up with other tasks, usually. Yes?
The idea of listening for God telling us that he loves us is something really new to me, and I'm kind of excited about that.
I'm glad. Thank you.
I think that really struck me, too. You said that, and immediately I was like, why from that part of belief? Because I think I was really raised in a condition that had the image of God sitting there. Mm-hmm. And we, I didn't come.
I was raised in tradition that had that imagery as well, and the music we sang was Psalms. It was the only music we sang because that was what God had written, so we didn't sing hymns at all. There's a lot of rigidity, and my father had a lot of that rigidity. And a couple of years ago, in the middle of the night, that was full of many, many things, I woke many times, and I kept hearing my father's voice singing Psalms. And it was very sweet, a very sweet voice has. And I could hear not the words I would now read perhaps, but the words I grew up singing. And suddenly I just heard this phrase, woke me out of a sound sleep, but thou forgivest sin that men may reverence thee. And just the words, as patriarchal as they are, they just spoke to me. Just, oh wow, God wants all that closeness. Mm-hmm. And it was very good. Mm-hmm. I can't even remember what song it's from.
I can't tell you that either. But what you did, is paid attention to it. Yeah. That you listened to it. And a lot of times those I love yous from God go unnoticed in our lives. And part of what happens when we begin to pay attention is that we begin to hear how many ways and how often God says that to us. And that's part of the practice, the discipline of learning to be attentive to that, to listening. How is it that God says, I love you today?
It's almost kind of like, I don't know, to go back to my analogy, sort of God's in the background, and if you're listening to a station or something, and let's say you're chopping carrots or whatever you're doing, you're kind of busy working on another project, and not really listening to the music, kind of listening to something else. Mm-hmm. You're busy, kind of, and you don't hear the radio really, you don't hear what's going on, but you're kind of doing two things at once. If you stop for a moment and you kind of go, oh wait, this is an important part, I'm going to listen to this, as the radio kind of goes on and you listen to it, it's almost kind of like stopping for a moment and kind of like, oh wow, God's speaking to me right now. And God has always been speaking, but it's just once you put down that what you're doing, put down the knife, or you put down whatever you're doing, and you stop and you kind of go, oh wow, God's always been speaking. Mm-hmm. And that's when you kind of go, why have I been doing all this all this time? And then, of course, task-oriented that I am, I go back to it. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of my analogy. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we're talking about. Yes.
What about music? How does music fit in all this? Is that something you use, or?
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, if I were to start listing languages that are very close to my mother tongue, music would be something that really does speak to me. And that's I mean, that I personally use music very carefully. I just came from a weaving meditation, Julia led us in a guided reflection, and asked us to go to a special place and to pay attention to what we saw there and what were the sounds. And what I heard was Bach's B minor Mass from the cradle and resurrection from the dead. And that, I mean, it was just right there, you know. And I think that, I mean, Baroque music, Bach, that speaks to me, not to everybody, but other kinds of music. And this, I don't know if not all of you were here, but this kind of haunting bamboo flute with wind chimes, you know, that to me evokes something in me that's not there on a regular basis.
Yes. I don't know why I keep thinking about this, but one of the books I was introduced to here at Holden many years ago was called The Faces of God. Mm-hmm. And what it really talked about was finding God in the faces of others, many times the unlovely. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes our spirituality, we could take a beautiful piece of music or something, mm-hmm. and so I can really find God in that. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I think we're called to find God in the faces of the unlovely or the unloved, mm-hmm. and I think that's harder. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we're struck by what we're offended by, as opposed to saying, this too is God, mm-hmm. you're speaking to me at this very moment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet, I know people for whom God's presence in the ones you call the unlovely is their mother tongue. Mm-hmm. I could name to you deaconesses whose very life, spiritual life, is so based in that. I mean, it's just, it flows from them so naturally, as naturally as other things flow from me.
Well, and I think who we find to be the unlovely is real different. You know,
that's
I happen
right.
to work with handicapped children, uh-huh. and I think they're wonderful, uh-huh. and I can find the faces of God there every uh-huh. time. But sometimes I have to admit that I'm offended by those that society would hold up as what we're all striving for, and mm-hmm. the materialistic, mm-hmm. and, you know, mm-hmm. and turned off, and yet there is much God as, you know, that handicapped children.
So maybe the question is, who's hardest for me to love?
Right.
And what spiritual practice, what discipline will help me to see the presence of God in that person? The Quakers, you know, have that phrase, the Christ in me meets the Christ in thee, you know. And it's easy in some relationships to experience that. Other things?
I think with children, looking at what you working with kids, they're so now oriented, and I'm always thinking about kind of the future or the past or what I have to do, or oh, I've got to get the balance of checkbook, or I've got these bills and I've got to do this. So, what am I going to make for dinner tonight, and what's happening tomorrow? And these children are always kind of like they're in the moment, they're in that at uh-huh. that very moment. There's nothing else going on, it's just now.
Right? That's one of the things to learn from children.
It's kind of, so I'm always reminding myself kind of that be here now moment. It's very easy to be off mm-hmm. and be somewhere else, but we're watching these kids kind of like, no, the future doesn't exist and the past doesn't either, but it's just now is eternal.
Mm-hmm. I think we have a tendency as adults to try to do two or three things at one time and not mm-hmm. do any of them well.
Well, right. And part of Brother Lawrence practicing the presence of God is learning, I mean, in the kitchen when he was cutting carrots mm-hmm. or whatever, to be attentive to that moment. And I think I'm with you that I usually have two or three things going on at once. And
watching TV, uh-huh. or, you know, whatever.
Reading a book, eating supper, you know, all at the same time. Talking on the phone, whatever.
That's
I could really relate to you with little snippets of scripture, because I always feel guilty that I don't sit down and go from cover to cover. But my best time with God is on my morning walks. And, you know, you got to have something to pray about. So then I finally discovered, ta-da, that if I just memorize a short little snippet sometime during the evening or afternoon or whatever, then carry that with me through my walk. That seems to be a whole lot better, and then I don't feel quite so guilty that I'm just sitting and reading from cover to cover, but yet I'm really thinking about it and digesting that. That is working.
I read a cute little story about a grandma that was on her treadmill, and she had pictures of all her grandchildren by the treadmill, and as she was on the treadmill, she prayed for each one of the grandchildren. Uh-huh. Okay.
My morning walk is a good prayer time for me. This morning I met a bear.
Oh!
Walk.
Same bear.
So, what?
They met a bear too.
So, I did have something to pray about. I have a guided reflection that I can do with you. It's about 20 minutes to 5, and this will take probably 10 to 15 minutes. And I would like to invite any of you who'd like to stay to do that. I have time to do that, to stay. And if some of you need to leave, maybe now would be the time to leave so as not to distract other people. Thank you very much, by the way. I enjoyed this.